Hey everyone, this is Cameron from Renegade Animation on renegadepopculture.com. If you like what we do, please give us a like, a follow, and a rating on Apple Podcast and wherever else you listen to them. We are everywhere. That way we can keep doing what we love, and that's talk about animation. And now, on with the show.
What's going on, guys? Welcome to another mini episode of Renegade Animation on the Renegade Pop Culture Podcast Network. My name is Mike. I'll be your host for this evening. Joining me, as always, is the animation guru himself, Cameron.
Howdy, howdy.
And today we have a review for the latest film distributed by 11 Arts, The House of the Lost on the Cape, directed by Shinya Kawatsura from a screenplay written by the lovely Riko Yoshida, based on the novel of the same name by Sachiko Kashiwaba. When a devastating natural disaster leaves 17-year-old runaway Yue and 8-year-old orphan Hiyori without a home, they're taken in by Kiwa, a strange old woman who offers to let them stay in an abandoned yet suspiciously well-kept house overlooking the sea, known as the Maioiga, a legendary house said to look after lost travelers. Despite Yui's hesitation to trust anyone and Hiyori's inability to speak, they begin to form a sisterly bond that allows them to find comfort in the Maioiga and embrace Kiwa's hospitality. However, when a menacing entity is accidentally released and threatens their new home, the three must face their fears to save it. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that when this was released in Japan last year, this was around 10-year celebration of the earthquake and tsunami.
So many people were displaced, their lives ruined, or affected in an unimmeasurable way.
I think this movie does a pretty good job visualizing the effects that the earthquake had on people of Japan at the time.
Yeah, so one thing to take note about this film is, like, when you look at the poster and you see the trailer, and it has, like, all the fantastical elements to it. This is not a Spirited Away kind of story. It's more of a Oko's Inn, My Neighbor Totoro, or a Letter to Momo kind of film. It's a slow burn as we focus the first 40 to 50 minutes of the 100-minute runtime on the bond between Yui, Kiwa, and Hiyori as they go to this really mysterious house and start to live a new life together. What's a lot of fun about how they explain the more fantastical elements of this film, the folklore tales are told in these cool rotoscope Science-Saru style flashback sequences, something that you would see in, like, maybe Lou Over the Wall.
These sort of kind of watercolor flashback sequences are probably some of the best ways to tell exposition. Usually exposition can be kind of, it's sometimes necessary, but too often it's presented in a way that's kind of droll, uninteresting. But when you frame it around like storytelling, it makes it easier to digest.
That was a big problem with Child of Kamiari Month, the animated film we talked about that hit Netflix back in February. They rolled out exposition with very flat background, nothing very interesting, and of just the two characters standing there. It's definitely handled way better here in the House of the Lost. They do start sprinkling in through those first 40 minutes, like the backstories of everyone. Mostly our two leads, Yui and Hiyori, who are from either disgruntled households or something tragic happened. Like Hiyori lost her family in an accident, and Yui has run away from her home due to a very toxic home environment that was brought upon by her father after her mother left them. And while they are at this shelter, like during a storm, that's when Kiwa comes into play and is like, oh yeah, these two are with me. And what's so nice about this movie is how nonchalant it is, but Kiwa is never mean to the two girls, and she treats everything just like a one step at a time. While Yui is very overprotective, she's like a stray animal that doesn't really know about her location. And then over the course of the film, she starts to be more open and caring for Hiyori and Kiwa. Hiyori does not speak for a mass majority of the film because of what happened with her family that has left her mute. They do find a good way to balance it all out. Sometimes, as it goes into the third act, it's a little clumsy at one point or another, but going from their arcs from point A to point B are still handled pretty well. It's just nothing that you haven't seen before, which is fine. It's executed in a way that still makes it compelling.
I think I agree with that. I've seen the movie twice now, so the second time, I think I got a better sense of the rhythm of how the story is told. And once you kind of know what the ending is building up to, it kind of makes the journey flow a lot better.
When you're sitting there watching the movie, you're wondering when are the mystical elements coming in, like with the spirits and such, or as Kiwa calls them, enigmas. They come in around the 50-minute mark with like the kappas and then those lion dogs and then the Chizu statues. And at one point, when they go to another magic house, they just unload all of the spirits on you at once. But what's so nice about it is, there's a little like, oh wow, this is wild that there are spirits. But the movie is never like have like a moment where it's like, oh, this is so scary that they exist. And then, oh wait, they're not as bad as they look kind of stories. Kiwa is just like, yeah, they're like neighbors. And they all talk in a very, like the Kappas especially, talk in a very, like they've been friends for years kind of chemistry.
I love the voice cast of the Kappas. The one that was easiest to point out was Mike Pollock, who probably is best known as Eggman.
No, he was very easy to spot. We'll take a quick mention of the voice cast. It's a very solid group of talented individuals. We have Madeline Morris as Yui, Risa May as Hiyori, and Pam Doherty is Kiwa, and she's very good as her. With the rest of the cast, including Casey Casper, Caitlin Glass, Michelle Mary, Ben Balmaceda, Alan Lee, Lucas Shuneman, Keiji Tang, and as we already mentioned, Mike Pollock, Brooke Kamler, Brent Mukai, Sarah Wiedenheft, and Laura Stahl, with the dubbing being done at Studio Nano, directed by Michelle Rojas. Just to get back to the spirits or the enigmas, they keep that tone of casual family adjacent feelings as they go to the other magical house. It becomes more like a family reunion at that point.
Yeah, it does.
That's very different. Like, it stands out compared to what Oko's In and A Letter to Momo, where A Letter to Momo handles the spirits and yokai as more of like comedy driven and with the mystical stuff kind of like in the background. Oko's In is more about dealing with like human ghosts. This one is just like, yeah, they exist. It's not a big deal. That, of course, changes when we deal with the villainous snake-like spirit, red eyes, that scares and makes people move out of their villages and homes to feed on their misery and sadness. Because a lot of what this film is about are being there for people. It's about being kind, looking out for one another, dealing with loss, grief, being remembered. It's overall about caring for one another during tough times and coming together to help one another. That's something that is sprinkled throughout the background and throughout small little dialogue sequences between the characters, which is handled very well because they don't make the disaster that happened beforehand the overall deal. It's more about how humans reacted to it and the emotional challenges that they overcome with one another. Now, for the animation, it's handled by David Production. Most people would know them for their work on Fire Force, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, and the very fan favorite Cells at Work. It's not an overly flashy film. It's definitely very consistent. The sharing of CGI and 2D animations handled very well. It's really pretty to look at.
It
And once
is.
again, those flashback sequences are handled very well. There's a real charm to the overall look, and just how the characters move and how they interact with one another. Like usual, like how we talk about, it's not always you gotta be super flashy and amazing, because I know this for US audiences. This is about to come out after the fantastic Inuel, and then is sandwiched between that and Goodbye Don Glees, which G Kids is also distributing alongside Inuel. But there's just something about a very well-made movie. It looks good.
This is the kind of movie where they're not trying to overload you with flashy imagery. It's just giving you exactly what you need to tell the story. But I think where they do get to kind of stretch their legs is with the designs of the Enigmas, and especially the design of Red Eyes when he's all fully formed and consuming all of the town's misery.
Like when he's like those small little snakes, and when he's big, he has a more sketchy, like pencil drawn style compared to the more polished look of everyone else, which makes sense. Misery and anger should look more chaotic than everything else. And the Enigmas are very appealing to look at, and they just feel very homey and charming. There's a very nice appeal to how everything looks. Having enigmas, spirits, yokai, or what have you in your film, show, or what have you can definitely lead to different and varying results depending on what you want to tell within your story. And here, it's just, hey, humans and these enigmas hang out among one another.
Very inviting, their presence in the film. And I would even say the same about Kiwa. Like, right from the moment you meet her, you just have this, like, this feeling of everything's going to be okay.
Yeah, I like that she's never really upset with the two girls. Like, she knows that they are already dealing with a lot of pain. So she's there taking step by step with making sure that they feel loved, healed, and welcome at this house. It's just a very nice movie. It might not be the most intensely dramatic film out there, but being appealing and heartwarming has its own merits that are worth taking into consideration.
I feel like this is definitely one of those movies that I would put in the category of, like, it's very therapeutic. Whenever you're going through any sort of tragedy, whether it's like a natural event or like a natural disaster, like an earthquake, or even something personal, like what Yue's has been going through, it's nice to have movies like this that you can turn to for comfort.
There needs to be varying experiences. It would get very boring if people kept making the same kind of story in the same way over and over and over again. It's like that when I see certain movies that distributors choose to release. Sometimes after a while, I'm like, I want something different. Then you have a film like House of the Lost, and it's a different change of pace. Now, it does do that thing where a lot of slice of life dramas do that thing where it's like, oh, we have to suddenly change to the conflict. There are definitely some ways you could say, like, huh, I don't know if Yui and her arc of like her conflicting relationship with her dad is ever truly fixed. But in a way, it's nice that she's like, I'm over you, and that it's not a clean cut happy ending. I mean, everything works out in the end, but it's mostly Yui, Hiyori, and Kiwa are now a family together.
I think that is her finding a new found family is more important arc of hers than resolving her issues with her father.
Well, it's like we have these comments from time to time, not on the episodes, but just of certain films saying like, oh, well, they cleaned that up very quickly, ignoring all the years of trauma and stress. And it's like, it depends on the story. And sometimes it depends on the company or the person making the film. Not every film is going to be shaped around your experience. It's just good to see that even though things do work out for Yui, it doesn't try to overcorrect and like fix everything. Like sometimes I've seen films where they fix everything and it's like, I don't know. It's all in the execution.
Right.
This movie is just like a very good comfort food movie. Just very loving, very appealing, just something you could turn on and enjoy without having to be in a very specific mindset too.
Even the music composed by Yuri Miyauchi supports that too. The score is very calm, cool, laid back. Very right away, it sets the tone for the rest of the film.
Yeah, it's very much like if you've played Animal Crossing or turned on a Nintendo menu system for like the Wii or the Switch. This has a very calm tone to everything. Reiko Yoshida is so good at what she does. She definitely makes the whole film work. Of course, that shouldn't be a shock because she helped write for a lot of really good slice of life stuff like Tamako Market, A Silent Voice, Liz and the Bluebird, The Heikki Story, and Daimon. She's just good. You pair her up with great people like Naoko Yamada or the director of The House of Lost, and she puts out some great work.
I just realized she also wrote some episodes of Violet Evergarden, particularly the one that makes everyone cry, called
Oh yeah.
Loved Ones Will Always Watch Over You.
Oh
And
yeah, that's her.
yeah, that's very much her.
In general, this is just a nice movie. I don't know if it's in my top 10, but it's definitely in my top 20, like near the 11 to 15 area. The director, if you want to check out what else this person has done, they've done the Nanon Biyori franchise shows and such. Yeah, if you like that show and you like more low-key animated features, definitely give this one a watch.
I agree with all of that. It won't end up in my top 10 by the end of the year, but it's still just a movie that I would recommend everyone check out if it happens to be playing near you. If you are a fan of more sort of laid back slice of life movies that still happen to have a fantastical element, or you're just a big fan of Reiko Yoshida's work, then yeah, you definitely should check this one out.
If you happen to miss the theatrical screening of this film, the movie will be out on Blu-ray, DVD, and digital a few weeks from now in September. So you'll definitely have an easy way to find a way to check this film out.
I appreciate that with 11 Arts, because you and I have had similar complaints about certain G Kids or Crunchyroll slash Funimation movies that have taken like forever to be released on home media.
Yeah, it's usually a legal situation, like some kind of documented deal where it depends on when they can release it on home video. Sometimes it's faster, sometimes it's like a year from now or so. It depends on what happens, and sometimes it gets a little annoying when it's like, man, I saw this great movie. When's it going to be put out on Blu-ray? And it takes like a year for reasons. Give The House of the Lost on the Cape a watch. Definitely go see it in theaters if you can.
All right. And yeah, that'll do it for this mini episode. Our next main project, we'll be talking about two shows that could not be more different. You'll find out more about those later. For now, Cameron, where can everyone find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at Cam's Eye View. I have my own website called camseyeview.biz where I review animated films and shows from around the world called The Other Side of Animation. I also have a Patreon at patreon.com/camseyeview. That's where you can find me.
And you guys can find me on Twitter at CaptainK42. You can check out my quick thoughts on letterboxd.com/CoachK42. And you can follow Renegade Pop Culture on Facebook and Twitter at Ren Pop Culture. You can also find us on YouTube, on Podchaser, on the Banana Meter. Listen to all of our podcasts on Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, etc. And last but not least, everything can be found at renegadepopculture.com. Need an escape? So do we. That'll do it for this episode of Renegade Animation. We will catch you guys later. Peace out.